Hey everybody, it's Mark Patterson. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way, just like my guest today. Before we get there, I want to bounce to my website really quickly, www.markpattersonnfl.com. I've got over 275 podcasts there. Been doing this now for a number of years, and I always find it very inspiring to talk to people like my guest today. We all need a lift, certainly I do. And so hopefully the guy today and others will bring a bright light to your heart. Also on there is my Everest journey, the movie, the film that won an Emmy for Best Picture. There are some links to that right there on the website, so go check it out. I continue to raise money for Higher Ground nonprofit, helps empower others, which is what we should all be about, empowering others the best that we can do. I do it through my campaign called Amelia's Everest. We've raised well over 100 grand now and continue to do so. So if you feel compelled, please go there. 100% of all those funds that go through Amelia's Everest go directly to Higher Ground. So nothing gets parked in my direction. Okay, on that note, let's jump into today's amazing guest. I got to know him a little bit a couple of weeks ago. I was inspired about his journey. And he's also another fellow Washingtonian, as I am. I want to bring him on. Jesse Bradley, how you doing?
Mark, it's so good to be with you. I'm honored to join you today. And I am inspired tackling those seven summits. I've watched, you know, the video, the movie. Love what you're doing. Lots of respect.
I appreciate that, brother. I mean, look, it's been a long journey. And it's interesting because we're going to get into your story a little bit, and it's fascinating to me because the magic number that you used, there was 10 years really of healing, but through that healing came a lot of power, knowledge, just really sounded like you really got centered in the way you wanted to live your life, you know, moving forward, which we'll talk about. But let's talk about your background because, you know, I grew up as a football player. It sounds like kind of your home was on the soccer field. You end up going to Dartmouth, which is, you know, I can tell you're like 50 points, you know, smarter, high IQ points than I got right here. But, you know, congrats on that. But did you grow up in the great state of Washington? Were you playing soccer? And then what was your path? How did you get to Dartmouth, you know, very prestigious Ivy League school?
Yeah, I grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, on the campus of the University of Minnesota. That's the Golden Gophers. Our apartment was in the parking lot of the football stadium. So football caught my attention first. I mean, Gophers haven't had that many legends. Tony Dungy probably stands out as a top name. But I, at age two, I told my parents, that's what I want to do when I'm old. I want to play pro sports. And I played a lot of sports in high school. We won state championships. Basketball was really a focus for me. That was my dream. But that's not where I had the most talent. And so I ended up playing soccer. And that's what led to playing at Dartmouth and having a great experience there. Phenomenal coach, Bobby Clark, who's just a legend internationally. You know, sports, it's all about the coach, right? What the coach brings, the culture, training up people. And when you're around the greatest coaches, that's when you grow the most. And that's true in business. That's true in life. And so I look back to the coaches I had, and I'm so grateful for that. I played overseas as well, Scotland, Zimbabwe, and just loved it.
Wait, jump. I just want to, like, before you just jump over there. So you go to Dartmouth, you know, it's a great school. You have a great experience because you have a great coach. The position you're playing, I think, was goalie. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And so how do you take that leap now from going from you're now graduated from school and now what's next? What was that connection piece?
Yeah, that's right. And even thinking about Dartmouth, you know, I go back to my mother because my parents got divorced when I was seven and mom stayed with me and mom made a lot of sacrifices, went back to school, worked extra jobs. So then she's changed me because I was struggling in school. It was getting worse every year. And she changed cities, moved from Minneapolis to St. Paul, put me in a different environment. And that changed the course, the trajectory for me academically. And then going into Dartmouth, you know, that was a place that was solid in terms of what I was learning, but also the soccer program was phenomenal. Division I, we made it to the final eight, Elite Eight. That was the best year we had in the tournament. And then, you know, in terms of what was next, I was a psychology major, but counseling drains me, to be honest. I can do some of it, but then I'm wiped out. And I didn't want to go into teaching, and I didn't know what I would do beyond sports. I figured as a goalkeeper, I could probably play till I'm about 40. And my plan leaving college, even though a lot of people were going to Boston, New York, the corporate world, I knew the dream was always to play sports. And sometimes we have dreams in our hearts that are there, and they're in our minds, and they've been there for many years. I mean, I would go to sleep with a soccer ball in bed. You know, I would, everything was that was the dream. And when it came true, it was amazing. I, you know, with my coach, there was a lot of open doors, and our team went over to Scotland. I went back over to Scotland and had a tremendous experience there. Scotland is rugged, competitive. It's not a place where you get a lot of hugs. You earn everything, and you got to prove it. And you can't fake anybody out. Very real, and it's kind of refreshing in that way. So locker rooms are tough. You grow up there. And coming out of Scotland, there were some other opportunities. And one, after graduating, one was with actually Man U. And my coach is good friends with Sir Alex Ferguson. And there was an opportunity to go to Man U. The other one was Africa, and it was Zimbabwe. It was the Highlanders Football Club in Bulawayo. And looking back, I've had moments where I thought, what would my life have looked like if I would have chosen England and chosen that prestigious club? But it didn't go that way. And part of it was because I saw the needs in Africa, the AIDS, drought, famine, struggling financially. And so I went to Africa, and also beyond the season was tutoring in the youth contact center, trying to help people academically, help people with their education. And I love being there. Africa's, and specifically Zimbabwe, is a place where there's a lot of love, hospitality. The minute you arrive, you know you're welcome there, you're loved, you're appreciated. People are so thankful, even though that's where I learned gratitude, because I didn't realize how much we have in America, and I took so much for granted. But I saw that the people there were more thankful than the average person I knew in our country. And I thought, I've got something to learn. I learned so much about rising up and overcoming challenges from the people in Africa, the generosity there, that even though they didn't have any material possessions, they would freely and joyfully give you what they had. If it was their only piece of meat, or if, you know, anything they could give you to express love, that's how they live. And that was the culture. And I learned so much in soccer. So I'll let you just keep jumping in whenever you want to.
No, I'm jumping in right now. So I'm trying to understand the connection point, because I think, you know, you were talking about, you know, you had a chance to be with either Man U, which is this prestigious, most prestigious soccer club in the UK, in London, and or go to Zimbabwe. You know, it's like we're, and you later found your gift of gratefulness and humility when you were down there because of the cultures. I have also been to Africa several times, so I know what you're talking about. I've been in these different villages where they had no water, and we built water wells for them and seen what they've done for us. But the point is, or the question is when you rewind it, where did you find the maturity to say, I'm going to bypass staying in things that are very comfortable versus going to someplace you've never been before? And it's just kind of like a Hail Mary in terms of, you know, all that you're living, you're eating, you're all the other stuff that go with it.
Yes, because through our coach, there's relationships, and relationships are the most important thing in life. And he had the trust of different clubs and coaches. Queen Park Rangers was another one in England. And through that, we weren't going to be given anything freely. We'd have to, you know, try out, we'd have to, but he had confidence in our abilities. And so he set up some of the players to have that opportunity, which is amazing, that opportunity, that support. In terms of going off the road a little bit and going down to Africa instead, there were some people at the time who thought this is dangerous. And so that's one piece to consider, but we went forward anyways. And I went with Tommy Clark, who is my 4 years, my roommate and just best friend in college. And then also there's times in life where there's a certain usual progression, and you have this in every career. Well, the next step's here, the next step's there. Now I'm a pastor, and there was one opportunity to go lead a church of a couple thousand in Pennsylvania, but I chose a church of a couple hundred in California. And what I'm saying is there's times in life where you go not just the usual, what everyone tells you to do, but you go because there's a sense of purpose, there's a sense of joy, there's a connection with the people. And for me, when I pray about it too, that's another thing, is like, all right, what's the sense, as best as I can tell, that this is the next right decision. Mm-hmm. And I really had that confirmation going to Africa. You know, England was a little more similar to Scotland. I was also ready for something different.
Yeah.
And it was just exciting to be there. It was an amazing experience.
That's great. That's great. That was the good news. So now let's turn to something that sets you back a little bit. So you do what you think you're doing when, well, first of all, let me reset this. So I've been down, I've climbed Kilimanjaro a couple of times. And when I've gone down to Tanzania, before you go, you have to take all these shots. One of them is malaria and that type of thing. And one of the things that you did at that time many years ago is you took, I think it was, I'm not sure if it was a shot or a pill, but you were taking malaria medicine that was going to help prevent you obviously from getting very sick. And it created some kind of toxic thing going on in your body, which really set you back 10 years. Like how did, like 10 years is a long time to be set back like that. Like how did that play out?
Yeah, absolutely brutal. What was supposed to protect me was killing me. And it was a prescribed medication, weekly, a pill, lyrium, quinine based, and it was to protect me from malaria. But after a season, it built up toxic levels in my system. And initially, the doctors there didn't know the cause. And they sent me back to America because they saw my health was declining rapidly. And to give you a picture of a couple symptoms, double vision, migraine headaches. I never have headaches. And I couldn't handle any light or any noise. And the most scary was with my heart. My actual physical heart would start to beat 160 beats a minute sitting still. That's tachycardia, racing heart rate. Also atrial flutter, abnormality, skip beats. It just couldn't keep a rhythm, couldn't regulate it. And there was pain in the left side of my chest day and night. In addition to that, there's all the psychological side effects. I started to have panic attacks, waves of depression. It was like I lost control. And athletes like to know their mind and their body. And, you know, I felt really comfortable with my mind and my body. And it felt like there was this foreign invasion that completely took over. And my emotional equilibrium was off. My temperatures were off, sweats and chills. And I flew back to America. We paid out of pocket, went to Stanford. The physician there listed 10 possible ways that I'm getting sick, 10 different causes. And one of them was side effects of medication. He's the first doctor who ever warned or identified it as a possibility. And I'll tell you, at that moment, I knew inside that that was the cause. Now, I made a decision. It was a huge decision. I think it's the reason I'm here today is because I stopped taking the medication. It's prescribed for a month after you return. Malaria can be latent. And every physician told me, keep taking the medication because you can't get malaria on top of how sick you are or else you're going to die.
Yeah.
And again, one of those quiet, you listen to that quiet voice and I prayed and I just knew it's the medication. And I made the decision against so many people's advice that I'm not going to take anymore. And we had my blood sent to the Center of Disease Control. Well, they sent it back weeks later, confirmed there were toxic levels of the medication already in my system. And I wouldn't be here today if I didn't make that decision. There's times in life where you have to make split-second decisions. Like when you're climbing those mountains, right? You got to make split-second decisions about the weather and do we keep going? Do we not? And those decisions right there, that's where, you know, I just ask for wisdom when I pray. You want to get good advice. Doctors give good advice a lot of times, but I look back, I'm so thankful to be alive today. I was fighting for my life for a year. The most threatening was with my heart. And literally there was a monitor on my heart all the time. And any walking, it would go up to 120 beats a minute. Mm. I couldn't control it. The rhythms, there was nothing that doctors could do. The cardiologists couldn't give me any medications on top of it because they didn't know how it would interact with the medication already. This drug inhibits the inhibitors of your heart. So the heart can't regulate itself. And I would just go through these storms. And it's just terrifying when your heart is beating out of your chest and you can't stop that. You just got to wait till the episode stops and you don't know if you're going to make it or not. And I lived in that for a year, literally, not to mention everything else that was going on.
Now, were you in the States or were you back in Africa?
Yeah, I moved back to the States and this happened. I moved back in my parents' house. It was humble pie. You know, my heart goes out to your daughter because I saw with some of the seizures and everything she's gone through and has gone through. And I can relate because typically you think your 20s is you're traveling the world, you're making all these friends, you're establishing this career. And when it shifts and life's going one way and all of a sudden life isn't going that way anymore, it's like a testing to your core. And what happened on many levels for me were shifts that were positive. I don't think they would have happened if I didn't go through this. But I believe that the greatest things in life can happen coming out of the worst experiences. And there's a hope that's greater than our challenges. And really the question I wrestled with is, who am I? Who am I without, you know, an Ivy League college, without my friends, without a career, without my health, with not really being in my right mind? Like, who am I? And what I really clicked in for me is that I've been living my life with a performance-based identity. And that can work to a degree, because if you have success, you can feel good about it. But a performance-based identity is really a roller coaster ride of feeling inflated and deflated and pride and shame. And what do you do when you don't have anything to fix or get better at or perform? And there was going to be no fast forward through this year. I was just sitting in it, right? And where do you start when you get eaten elephant? So I had to find a new identity. Identity is like an anchor. You drop it somewhere. And I have had to find a new place to drop it. And what I realized is that I'm loved. And it's going to be there in love. God's love is the greatest love of my life. People around me love me. It's not going to be in anything performance-based. And that right there started to give me a freedom and started to open up some new doors. Another one, I'll give you a glimpse. In my family, when tough times come, you don't cry, you don't have a pity party. You just, it's kind of you white knuckle, you try harder, you do better, and you improve and learn. Again, there was no way just to apply that. That's a great quality. I'll tell you, perseverance, determination, and persistence, I commend people who have it. It's important, but it wasn't going to get me through this. And what I had to shift and start to let people into my pain and open up my heart in some new ways. I was more of the mindset like, I'm fine, I'm good. You don't need to ask. You know, I'm going to make it through this. You know, let's not talk about it. But that doesn't really bring the deepest healing. And I say a lot of times there's no healing until the revealing. And I had to get more honest and lay out some stuff. And what I found is that people will actually still care for me. They won't think less of me. Even God wants to be in there. I had a view of God that he's only interested in my success. And it was like, I didn't know how to connect with God on that level. And I started to pour out my heart to people, cry with people, let people in. And that was massive. So these things, you know, that they're not small. I started to give thanks 10 times every day. 10 things I would identify. Could be a hot shower, could be a blueberry muffin, could be a hug from my dad, you know, but I would list 10 every day so I wouldn't be consumed with what I lost. I would remember what I still have. And I started
let me just jump in here, okay? Because you're throwing out a lot and I just want to unpack things, okay?
Right on.
So one of the things is that when you're talking, you know, that came to mind is that this happens so often to athletes, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, since I'm in the NFL community, you know, there's so many of these other guys that I've known over time that, you know, and they're still doing it where, you know, 40, 50 years later, they're still hung up on what they did 40, 50 years ago, right? Yes. So they hadn't made that transition, that period of time. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment of loss that you have to go through. You also find this in the military. I've got a good friend, Nate Boyer, who just is coming out with this film right now. And it wraps a lot around the identity of what's next when you come out, and that the military just kind of like leaves you at the corner street and says, good luck, right? Mm-hmm. A little bit like the NFL used to do. They do a lot better job now.
Yeah.
And so I can really identify with some of the things that you're talking about. And when you take that focus off yourself and it is important to pray. It is important to have hope. It is important to be grateful and say thank yous to 10 different things every day. Mm-hmm. But along with that takes action. And sometimes that what goes along with that, I think, is stepping into the fear mm-hmm. and going after something that you don't know that you're capable of, or maybe you're fearful of. But it's just one of those things that, you know, to make progress in life and to feel like you have a purpose again, you do have to put yourself out there.
Such a good point. So well said. Because there's nothing like, you know, an experience, and you know it, when you're in a stadium, the big game, the team, the locker room, the camaraderie, everything that goes with professional sports, you just can't step into another career and have all that. And there's a grieving, and I hate grieving. I'm fighting against grieving. You know, I didn't want a minute of grieving. And yet, if you don't grieve, a lot of times you don't work through it. And I didn't have a plan. I didn't know. Well, I didn't even know if I was going to live, but I didn't have a backup career. I hadn't been training on the side for a bunch of seasons, or I didn't like wasn't ready to step into business or something like that. So I was really clueless as far as what is my life even going to look like? Doctors had no answer. And my recovery was so gradual. So I think it's important. You start where you are, you use what you can, you know, you do what you can and you use what you have, and you got to start rebuilding. And there's a verse in the Bible that stood out to me at that time where Jesus says, your house will be like a house on the rock and not the sand. And I felt like everything's falling apart. Like I want something solid in the foundation. And gratitude was part of that, you know, and learning how to give thanks even when I don't feel like it. I like to say a gritty gratitude. On my wall, I started to chart progress and I had to celebrate, you know, now I can walk 12 minutes instead of 8 minutes without my heart racing in terms of like going up to 160 beats a minute. And I charted out over months, because when you're in a chronic situation, you don't feel like you're making progress. And it's not until you can look back a year later and say, wow, I've got 5 extra minutes I can walk now. And then you have to celebrate that. And those are milestones, and it's progress, and it's gradual, it's painful, but it's moving forward. And then another important thing in life, I think when you're at your lowest, start serving other people. I started volunteering, helping with, it was junior high kids. And I knew I didn't have the energy to keep up with them. I knew I couldn't do it very often, like once a week, but I started serving. And that right there will take you out of yourself in a good way. And it'll give you a new purpose. The pain that I went through forged and fueled a new purpose and passion in my life. And I had a greater compassion for people who were suffering. I had a greater desire and fire to make a difference in people's lives. And I knew I needed to, again, take those first steps. It's hard to steer a parked car. So you got to start moving. Clarity will sometimes come a little later down the road, but I just started serving in that way. And there was a lot of new habits. You know, I look back now and I could say,
the new habits for a sec. One thing that's really interesting that you were talking about, because sometimes people get really hung up on this, is when you're being grateful about different things, which you said, you know, you were, it's really hard to be pissed off at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. If you're giving gratitude, like I'm so grateful that you're on this podcast, it'd be really hard for me because all my focus is on you and doing this thing right now, that it's really hard for me to be really angry because somebody did something, you know, over here, because all your energy is where your focus is going. Right. Yeah. Which is on you and then on being grateful that you're here. So I think that's a big, gigantic component of all this. And then the other thing too, is just like, you got to keep climbing, right? You got to keep moving, actually were your words, right?
That's right.
When you start, again, when you start serving others, your focus goes off where your energy has been, which is on negative things. And when you're putting on other people and how you can help and serve, it just changes the whole dynamic and you feel so much better. It just, that's just the way the brain works and the human body goes.
Yes.
So you nailed it. So I want to ask you this. You've got like 1,000 pearls of wisdom, and I apologize for cutting you off, but I just want to make sure we're hitting on these things. So you're out there, you're transitioning, you go through this period of time, you've got this malaria issue that goes on for a long time, but there's all these amazing things that come out of it. So where do you ultimately, for a guy that grew up in Minnesota, how do you ultimately land in the great state of Washington, not too far outside my home city of Seattle? As the pastor, where now you're flourishing, obviously you're serving others in a big time way. Like, how did that all work?
You know, it was something I would never imagine have happened. I didn't grow up believing in God. I had no interest in God. At Dartmouth, I took a religion class and I was assigned the Bible. And I was like, who is this Jesus? Yeah. And I did not see that one coming, but I just kept asking more questions, asked dozens of questions, got more information. And it was going to be my head, my heart engaging it. I couldn't figure out, with all the success of the world I had, how come I still felt something missing inside? And so spiritually, come from a family, kind of like Baskin Robbins, 31 flavors, a little bit of everything. And when I made that decision that, okay, Jesus is going to be my foundation, I'm going to trust him, man, things changed in my life. And I believe that the internal happens first, and then it's played out in the external. So, you know, you mentioned it so well, that gratitude and serving, when that happens, it's like you crawl out of a hole. A big thing for me was bitterness and resentment. And there's different people I could never forgive. There was, even through this medication, you know, being given this and then no warnings, like there were lawsuits that were going on. I forgave. Forgave doesn't mean what the other person does is right, but it frees me from a jail. When you have resentment in you, it's like this bitterness and this poison. So there were things that had to happen on the inside of me, I think, before I end up in a place like Seattle and, you know, I'm here. And even like you mentioned it, and it was really powerful, I think, is that when you're an athlete, you're focused on one part of your life. And sometimes you don't even realize that the gifts and the talents and the abilities you have that are going to come alive after that. And I had no idea, like I hated public speaking. And it wasn't until after college that all of a sudden it was like, wow, I discovered like there's a gift there. And there was a lot of things that started to come alive in me. And I realized, I thought I didn't want to be a pastor because it just looks kind of stuffy, looks kind of boring. It just looks very contained. And I'm not even a church guy growing up. And then I started to see different pictures and paradigm shifts. And it's like, wait a second, I can be caring for couples in their marriage. I can be out in the community doing things. Like we can be providing free clothes and resources for people. I can teach and learn more. You know, there's just, we can help people overseas and kids that are orphans overseas and clean water in Africa. And it was like, wow, I never realized how much potential is here, and then who I am and what a good fit it is. And so now, I mean, I'm energized every morning. I still, soccer's a big part of my life. I have four kids playing. I like to play, but we're doing faith and family nights with Seattle Sounders. We got another one coming up in a month here, Tacoma Stars. And there's just a lot that happens in terms of sports and what I'm doing right now. That's special, that's unique. And so I'm very grateful for where I am now. You and I know how the Pacific Northwest is a special place. A lot of people in the country don't realize that it's an amazing place. And the beauty that's around us, we've just felt like we've been home here the whole time.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, another thing you mentioned, four kids. I know you're married. I believe at least one of those kids is adopted. And you know, when somebody takes that on, that's a big lift. And not saying that's a negative experience, but it's a big lift. They're not your kids. And now you're, you know, everything is different. And you have to integrate that into your existing family. Mm-hmm. What was the decision behind that?
Yeah. You know, a couple things come to mind. One of them is that, again, pain can become redemptive. And I know what it's like to have my dad leave my house, my life, and then have that absence and that void. And because of that, I can't imagine what it's like if you're a kid and you have two parents that aren't available. And so providing a forever family, a loving family, a secure family for a child, I mean, that to me is one of the richest things. In the training, I'm so glad for the honest assessment because it was very clear this might be one of the most difficult things in your life, and it also might be one of the best. And sometimes in America, I think we try to separate those and make them mutually exclusive. We think, well, the easiest is the best. But actually, it's the most difficult that's often the most rewarding, and they go together. And every adoption story is a healing story. Those kids are amazing. If I could, you know, encourage everybody, it would be to help out the orphans starting in our country, the foster care system. If we open up our hearts and our homes, you could not only bring them into your home, maybe you'll be a mentor, maybe you'll be a parent. I don't know how it'll play out, but just make yourself available. Or maybe you're going to support some of the families who are doing it. We don't need a foster care system. This can be gone in a couple years if people step up. And I love our son. He's been an amazing addition to the family. And you know, he's just as important to me as any of the other kids. And our family, I feel like, is just so much more full with him. And so it's not necessarily an easy thing. You know, one of the hardest decisions, and again, I'm going to be honest here, is that once you qualify to adopt, then the social worker starts to bring different children to you saying, do you want to move forward with this one? And what do you do when the kids who are offered, you know, have challenges that include physical, emotional, developmental, you know, and they'll ask a question like, well, are you okay if this child's never independent? Are you okay if this child's never going to rise above like a second grade education? Are you okay if, you know, and they start asking you that this child's going to have major surgeries coming up in the next few years? And I'll tell you what breaks my heart is that, you know, there's kids that they'll bring to you, they'll say, you know, this child's 2 years old and has been raped many times. You know, you're just like, oh, you just feel sick, you know? And it's like, and when you know those realities, it's like, well, how can we help more? You know, we're doing something right now to bring clean water to kids in Africa. It's because I've been to Africa and I've seen the drought and I've seen the poverty. And it's like, I just want to encourage people today, if you've seen something difficult or you're hearing about a need and it stirs your heart and you can do something about it, don't put your head in your sand in the head in the sand. Don't retreat or be passive, but instead, like whatever that is that has your name on it, like go towards it. Like I love that about first responders. Everyone else is moving away. They're going towards it. And I think collectively we need to move towards some solutions. We can't just wait until this person takes care of it or someone with more money takes care of it or someone in government takes care of it. Like we need to step up in our own neighborhoods and start to do it right. Love one another well and unite and break through some cultural norms and solve some problems together. So I guess it runs deeply for me that when I think about the kids, I just want them to be safe. I want them to be in loving homes. And I think together we can make a big difference this decade. And that's something in America. And I also think we can bring clean water to people by 2030. And we're on a chart right now. Dramatic difference we can make. When I heard that $50 brings clean water for a kid for the rest of their life, like we'll collaborate. We collaborate with World Vision. We had over 100 people run a half marathon, and that led to a lot of money. Now we have a digital campaign taken off for that. And when we can do something, you know, there's a verse in the Bible that says, if you know the good you can do and don't do it, well, that's sin. That's missing the mark. And so often we think of sin as like adultery, you know, and sure, that is sin. But I'll tell you, it's the good things we can do, the potential, because we're all made in God's image. God's given us all resources and abilities. And if we just step into that God-given ability and purpose, and we just live in that fullness, like it's so exciting. That's when life comes alive. That's the life that is truly life. And I know because I was alive in one sense and successful in one sense on the outside, but the inside story, there was a massive void. And when you're alive on the inside, then good things are going to come in.
Well, you can also feel that energy too when somebody walks in a room. Earlier in the pod, you talked about, you know, when you, I think it's when you're at Dartmouth, you were a psychology major, but you didn't want to be a counselor necessarily because that can be over the moon draining, right? Listen to everybody's problems.
Yeah.
I believe, I don't know because I'm not a pastor, but it seems like when you know, you have a church, you have a lot of people have a lot of problems. They want to come talk to their pastor, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting how full circle, you know, that's kind of come back around. I'm sure it's very life fulfilling for you to be in that space.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you are kind of going back to where you started in a sense of now you're trying to give people advice and counseling about their path forward. And certainly you're tapping into some of your experiences about that. But, you know, have you found that overwhelming or have you found that just like it's the right combination?
Right on. There's a couple ways you can do it. And the longer I've been in it, and you probably feel the same way, Mark, is that it's about partnerships, collaboration, and empowering people. And for anyone listening in your business or organization, nonprofit, in those settings, so often it is the 10 or 20% of the people that are doing all the heavy lifting. And the longer I'm doing it, I find that my role is to empower and equip other people. I don't just want to be a doer. I want to be a developer. And yes, you can get burned out being a pastor in 3 months because of all the needs. And it's intense because it's physical, emotional, it's relational, and it's spiritual, all these different things. But I'm grateful for our team and I'm grateful for the culture because the culture is how can we train, encourage, and empower more people and not threatened by that? Like we want to see everyone come to life. And I feel a little bit like a goalkeeper in some ways. You know, goalkeepers in that position, they see the big picture. They have the best view of the field and they communicate and they try to set people up for success. And they're overall, they're very aware of the whole team. And so I'm in that position often as a pastor right now. And, you know, the other thing, this is daily for me, but it's something I learned in that recovery from Africa, is that the battle's really primarily between my ears, and it's a battle of the mind. And the first thought that comes in, psychologists say we have over 6,000 thoughts a day. And those first thoughts are sometimes destructive, selfish, right? They're not always positive or wise. And you don't have to harbor, believe, and entertain that thought. You can replace it intentionally. And I call it the power of the second thought. And it's a second thought that's true, that's noble, that's directional. And what I'm doing during the day to maintain mental health and overall organizational health is it starts in my own mind. And when those thoughts that are coming in at first that aren't good, I'm replacing them all day. And I feel like as a goalkeeper, I was always protecting the net from shots that were going in. And my role is to keep those out. And so now that same kind of skill and approach, it's internally and it's with my thoughts, because as your thought life goes, so will your life go as well.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that. I tell you, you have been on Good Morning America, GMA, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and so would you consider this more of a highlight than being on GMA?
I love it, man. I'm so curious about more of your life because I just don't meet many people who played in the NFL. I see the causes you're behind, and then the podcast, Climbing the Seven Summits. I don't even know what you're doing in Sports Illustrated. I know your title, but I feel like you're someone you have a big vision and you go hard after it. And I like to lock arms. I respect people that do that because the sad part is to leave points on the field, right, in life. And I just feel like your approach is like you're not going to leave anything on the field. Like you're going for it. And climbing those mountains, the view from up there, I mean, not many people have had those views. You've climbed the highest peaks and summits. Yeah. And so I feel like God's given you a lot of gifts. God, you also have maximized your potential in many areas, and you're able to see things that a lot of people don't see. So, I mean, you know, we just, in the end of my days, I just want to be faithful. I don't want to feel like I wasted my time and my energy. And I feel like in some ways, the problems in the world are more obvious than ever before, or they're pretty blatant. It's not passive. Now we need some major turnarounds in a number of areas. And I just want to be part of those solutions. I want to work with people who are philanthropic. I want to, get creative on what maybe we've never done it before. But I feel like this is a time where between the internet, podcasts like this, I mean, it amazes me. We can have a conversation across Zoom and let's say 20,000 people listen to it. Like, Mark, you're only going to see like 10% of the impact of your podcast, you know? Yeah. So whether it's Good Morning America or this, we live in a time where it's like the start of the printing press. The tools at our fingertips right now and the platforms are amazing. So keep doing what you're doing. I mean, I'm honored to be, you've had hundreds of guests and phenomenal conversations. I've been checking it out this week. And so this is a joy to be with you and just to kind of dream together.
No, I appreciate that. You know, I do have more things coming down the road that I'm going to be launching here pretty soon. And it's just another iteration. You know, I really feel like I turned 60 years old. And I can't believe I'm even saying that number, but I really feel like right now in my life, it's time to accelerate and go and not, peel back and go play golf. Not that would be a bad thing to do, but it's just not my path, right? We all have our own journey. Hey, Jesse, where can people find you? Because you've got some just great messages and your inspirational, great energy. Where can people find you?
Appreciate that. You know, we just put up a new website, hopehabits.org, and there's free content on there. There's 30 videos in this series on marriage, and there's also a 7-day hope challenge. Again, practical stuff, and it's all free. All the content's free. And then on social media at Jesse J. Bradley. And if you've got creative ideas, you want to collaborate, just reach out and love to hear from you, hear your story, and see how we can work together.
Love it. Love it. Okay, buddy. Listen, thank you very much for coming on. You've definitely been a bright light in my day to kick things off just after Labor Day in September, kicking off in the fall season of football and soccer and all kinds of different stuff. So appreciate you. Thank you for coming on.
Mark, thank you so much. And also, I just say, don't let your age stop you. Like, your next decade is going to be amazing. And it's not only what you're doing, but it's the hundreds and thousands of people you're inspiring. And that's a legacy. That's a strong legacy. So thanks so much for connecting today.
I appreciate it. Okay, there he is, the one, the only, Jesse Bradley. Thank you.